Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. You know, we've had a bunch of special editions this week. This is the normally scheduled Thursday podcast. How about that? We did one normal today, but we've been lucky. We've had Sean Hannity on this week. What a fun discussion that was yesterday. We put it up on YouTube in case you want to see it. Today, we're going to talk about some of the big issues going into the fall. No, we're not going to talk about Russia today. Sorry, if you came to listen to Russia, I'm going to disappoint you because we're going to talk about voter fraud. We're going to talk about religious freedom. We're going to talk about COVID restrictions. We're going to talk about a transgender debate going on in Pennsylvania. And the reason we're going to talk about it is because we have Jenna Ellis in the house. That's right, President Trump's senior legal counsel for the campaign, a lawyer for the Thomas More Society, on the front lines of both voter fraud and the religious liberties battles going on in the midst of this 2020 election. So Jenna Ellis will be with us in a few seconds. You're not going to want to miss that. She is a rising star of the conservative movement, advocate for homeschooling. She herself was homeschooled. She was a remarkable law student, lawyer, doing great work, a prosecutor. If you haven't heard Jenna speak before, this is a great opportunity to listen to someone who's a rising star on the conservative side and also a very capable lawyer who is going to be very visible, very involved on the front lines of two of the epic constitutional battles we're going to be facing headed into the 2020 November election. What are they? Religious freedom from COVID-19 restrictions and ballot security, voter fraud, getting an honest count of America's votes on Election Day. Jenna Ellis is going to talk about all that. She had big news this morning. She sued Gavin Newsom, Los Angeles County, the mayor, to help a church out in California be allowed to have services that the state, the government, has been trying to shut down. So we'll have breaking news on the show with Jenna Ellis in just a few seconds. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about today's news headlines, a couple developments on the COVID-19 front that I think you want to hear about. And then we'll go right to Jenna Ellis. We'll be back in a few seconds after this great commercial break. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back to the commercial break. As I said, we're going to have Jenna Ellis, a lawyer, senior legal advisor for the Trump campaign, somebody that's on the front lines of the battles of religious liberty today in America. She has a very powerful argument today. And let me just give you a little quick outline of what she's working on this morning. We broke this at about 8 o'clock this morning on Just the News. It's a very important story. But Jenna Ellis is part of the Thomas More Society, which today filed a lawsuit against the state of California, Governor Gavin Newsom, Gil Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, and other state officials, because Grace Community Church, led by the famous half-century pastor, John MacArthur, is being forced to close down its worship services. It does not believe that is fair, and so they sued today in state court. I expect this case will ultimately rise to the federal courts and maybe all the way to the Supreme Court. This is an important litigation to keep an eye on. And I want to point out something. We're going to talk to Jenna about this in a second. But in the complaint, this balancing of freedoms in the middle of a COVID-19 crisis, everybody says, I agree, the COVID-19 crisis is important. It's serious. We ought to take it seriously. Wear your mask when you're around people. Do social distancing. wash your hands, do all the things to try to help each one of us stay healthy in the middle of this pandemic, because it's real. It's a real virus. Let's not pretend it isn't. But she points out some really big incongruities in California, which is California's allowed protesters to be inches apart on the streets without arresting them or harassing them or trying to force them down. They've allowed marijuana dispensaries to stay open for business. They've allowed Walmarts and food stores and doctors and even abortion clinics to stay open and operating, let people congregate in small numbers. And yet they won't let this church or other churches have their normal worship services, even if they practice social distancing, even if they wear masks. There's a lot going on. And the question here is, if we're going to have these restrictions, will they be applied uniformly? Will a person going to Walmart or the marijuana dispensary of the or the abortion clinic be treated the same way as someone that goes to an evangelical church, a Catholic church, a Muslim mosque, a Jewish temple? That is what's at stake in Jenna Ellis's litigation that she filed this morning in the state of California on behalf of the church there. All right, other news on COVID-19. I think some very important developments. My good colleague, Daniel Payne, who's done a great job just really working on the various ways that you can see progress in the war against COVID, because we want progress, right? We want things that are working to get to the forefront and be there. And we also want to challenge some of the assumptions that may not be based in fact that some of our public health officials have misled us or misguided us on. And listen, no one's perfect. It isn't a failure to admit that you made a mistake. There are reasons to believe that some of what we did in the pandemic early on didn't work. Some of the things we did in the pandemic that were criticized did work, like stopping travel from China in late January, like President Trump did. That everybody now agrees was the right thing to do. But back in January, a lot of people were calling it xenophobic, racist, unnecessary, overreactive. Well, guess what? That turned out to be the right decision. So people can be wrong in this COVID-19 pandemic, and they have been. Daniel has an important story today, which reminds us that these deaths that have been reported as COVID-19 deaths aren't necessarily just about COVID. And there is a study out of England that after it was done, it lowered the death rates in England for COVID-19 fatalities by something like 10 or 11%. You can go to justthenews.com and see that. That's a very important statistic, a very important development that reminds us that some of these early numbers may not be accurate yet, that when we're through the fog of war, when we do auditing, when we check things, that we're going to find out that some numbers are inflated, maybe some numbers are underreported. But never in a crisis like the pandemic do we get everything right in the first count. And so that's one of the important things. Well, what Daniel has is he talked to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, the main health agency in America, and they told him that at least 3% of the deaths currently listed as COVID-19 caused actually involve other calamities, not just comorbidities, but things that happened to the person prior to the death that has been listed as COVID-19. These include injuries in car accidents or work accidents, poisoning, other adverse events. You can imagine all of the things that happen on a daily basis, a heart attack, other things. And what the CDC is saying is that they believe that these people suffered something serious, went to the hospital, went to the doctor, were trying to treat the injury and may have then contracted COVID-19 as part of it. In some other cases, it may not, as we have seen a few times where things have been reversed, like a person who was killed in a car accident or motorcycle accident, and they listed COVID-19 as the cause of death. They may have been killed by something entirely else, but at least 3%, the CDC, is the first time we've gotten a statistic from the CDC. At least 3% appear to involve not just COVID, but other ailments, calamities, crises, adverse events, as they say in the medical profession. I think that's a very important story, and we should keep an eye on that. Daniel Payne has that story atop Just the News. If you go to justthenews.com right now, you will see that. And I think that as we go through the next few days, I think we're going to learn some more about what is going on. Finally, the last COVID-19 story I want to point out to you again on justthenews.com. You go there if you haven't checked it out today. A lot of great headlines. The Yale professor, Harvey Risch, this is an epidemiologist, globally respected, out of Yale University. He is in complete disagreement with the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx. Why? Because he has, he says, empirical data showing that the combination of hydroxychloroquine, the antibiotic azithromycin, and the vitamin mineral zinc does have a profound effect in protecting people or helping people overcome, not protecting them. It's not an anecdote. It's not a vaccine. But if you get the early symptoms of COVID-19, it makes people better much quicker before they get to a worse state of the disease. He's adamant about this. And, he's become more and more vocal over the last couple of weeks. And I want to read something he said, because he said that this when you have the first stage of this, and it doesn't, his opinion is if you get to the critical stage, you're very sick, this is not going to help you. But at the early stages, it can ward off and stop the COVID-19 disease from advancing from anything more than like early flu-like symptoms. It works. It can prevent you from killing. This combination, the triple therapy combination, is there. And here's what he says about the failure of Washington bureaucracies, Washington health public officials, to not allow this triple therapy, to not acknowledge the data that shows it's working. And I think that that's a very important thing. Here's what he says. It is a serious and unconscionable mistake that the FDA has used inpatient data to block emergency use petitions for outpatient use. All right, so that's what the FDA has done. They did a couple of clinical studies of people who were really sick and in the hospital with COVID-19, said hydroxychloroquine didn't work, therefore nobody can use it. And what he's saying is, well, that was for sick people. You should make a different, separate determination for outpatient people who maybe are not as sick, didn't need hospitalization, because the data he has, scientific data, he's not making stuff up. He's not pulling something out of his hat. He is looking at real empirical studies. When people with early symptoms of COVID-19 take azithromycin, take hydroxychloroquine, take zinc together, the triple therapy, he says they get better quicker. There's no doubt, early stage, it works. And he cannot understand why the FDA, the CDC, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the NIH can't grasp this and put this into action to save more American lives. And if you haven't seen the latest from Harvey Risch, go to justthenews.com. You'll get that headline. Very important story. This is a debate that won't go away. And I think we're all left wondering now, that is it just because President Trump embraced hydroxychloroquine early that these doctors, these public health officials, these other folks will not acknowledge that in some scenario, maybe not the exact one the president mentioned, but in some scenario, the hydroxychloroquine triple therapy treatment does work, and we could save lives with it. We could save people from having to get to the hospital stage of COVID-19, where your chances go down. We can save high-risk patients early on from it. It's not a prophylactic. It's not a vaccine. It's not a plasma treatment. It's a triple therapy to help people at the early stages of this. Dr. Harvey Risch, the epidemiologist from Yale University, he is really, really becoming an agitator on this. And the question is, do our public health officials, do our governors who've spoke out against hydroxychloroquine, maybe for good intention reasons, are they willing to step back for a second? As all things in a pandemic or war or other things that we're fighting, things change. We sometimes have early assessments that don't turn out to be true. Sometimes we have early conclusions that turn out to be false. I think at the end of the day, the question now before us that Harvey Risch is trying to force into the medical community is, will people step back and look at this issue with fresh eyes and maybe acknowledge that not everything that happened there is what we thought it was? That is a question we're facing, and we'll find out soon if that happens. All right, folks, we're going to go to that next commercial break. When we come back, Jenna Ellis, a lawyer for the Trump campaign, a senior legal advisor, on the front lines of a big breaking news story out of California today. Jenna Ellis will be joining us in a second. One last thing, you're going to hear from our sponsors and our advertisers. If you want to continue supporting the show, if you like the podcast and the guests we have and the conversation and the civility that we try to have while getting you information in the news, you can do something. You can support our advertisers. You can buy their products, subscribe to their services. They help us make these shows, our Just the News website, our reporting possible. You can help us continue doing that by supporting these very generous, kind, well-intentioned, awesome advertisers and sponsors who have all great products. I use most of them. They're incredible. Please remember, if you want to do something and you like their products, this is something you can do quickly to make a difference as we grow here at justthenews.com. All right, enough with that. We're going to go to that commercial break. When we come back, Jenna Ellis will be in the house. Just a few seconds. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, Jenna Ellis, is joining me. Jenna is the senior legal counsel for the Trump campaign, a fantastic lawyer, and she's in the middle of a big breaking story this morning because she filed a lawsuit against Los Angeles, California, and the mayor and the governor and the attorney general of California over religious freedoms and the effort to close down a church there in California led by Pastor John MacArthur. Jenna, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, John. It's great to talk with you. And yeah, so much going on, and especially for religious liberty.
I suspect you had a sleepless night last night because this morning you filed a very important religious freedom lawsuit. Tell us the latest about what happened this morning.
Yeah, so I wear a lot of different hats, and you know, this is in my capacity as special counsel to the Thomas More Society, which is a nonprofit that funds religious freedom and family and faith litigation and provides defenses for people exactly like Pastor John MacArthur, who has a church of about 6,000 people out in Los Angeles and Sun Valley. And we filed a lawsuit asking the state of California and Los Angeles County to declare that the onerous and unconstitutional restrictions on religious liberty and on the free exercise of faith and worship there as unconstitutional, and declare that as null and void, and then also to declare that those onerous restrictions cannot be enforced against the church. So, John, this is just so insane what Los Angeles County is trying to do, because even in negotiating with their council over the past week and a half, they asked us to show video of the indoor sanctuary, that it was completely empty except for Pastor MacArthur and staff. Wow. I mean, this is something where they don't even want to say, oh, well, you can have 100 people, which, you know, a church of 6,000, that's impossible. But they want to put such onerous restrictions of closing the sanctuary and then also ridiculous restrictions outdoors. So what they've been saying is that the regulations that they provided to the church actually said that you could not get within a 6-foot radius of any other family group. And if you even spoke face to face for 15 minutes or more from someone that was not within your family group, then you would have to self-quarantine for 14 days. And that's wow. Not just somebody who knowingly has COVID.
Meanwhile, you could go to anybody. Walmart and do that in no time.
Exactly. Exactly. And so this is specifically targeting churches. And, you know, John MacArthur is on the side of the Constitution. And for people who don't realize this, the Constitution is mandated our government to preserve and protect religious liberty and protect churches and houses of worship. And so it's Gavin Newsom and all of the operatives in the state of California that are violating their mandate to preserve and protect religious freedom. And so Pastor MacArthur stands on the side of the actual law, not these tyrannical imposition of orders that find no basis or protection in the law.
there's some great lines in this, and I think it really gets to the unequal protection, undue process that has gone on here. I'll just read this line. It was such an eloquent line. It's unconstitutional for Governor Newsom and the state of California to discriminate against churches by treating them less favorably than other organizations and activities that are not protected by the First Amendment. And you pull out here some really good examples. This is especially the case when the government, meaning California, has given free rein to protesters and is not similarly restricting marijuana dispensaries, large retail outlets and factories, and abortion providers. There's a contrast for you. Tell me where this goes next. And actually, there's another line in here that caught my attention, and it's actually, it tugs at your heart. It's a personal one. With deaths from the COVID-19 suicide pandemic exceeding those from the actual coronavirus pandemic, Grace Community Church decided that it would no longer sit by and watch its congregants and their children suffer from an absence of religious worship and instruction. This is a statistic I hadn't heard, but are there more, have there been more suicides and coronavirus deaths?
Yes. And in Los Angeles County, I mean, this is why, you know, that the services that churches provide absolutely are essential because, you know, if you think about this in the midst of a health pandemic, we're not going to close hospitals. Why would we close churches that deal with people's spiritual needs, not just their physical needs? And so, you know, this is something where we've seen President Trump is absolutely correct that, you know, the supposed cure is worse than the problem when you are closing all of these really essential services and particularly churches that provide counseling, that provide community, that provide, you know, spiritual needs. And so we have seen, and in fact, John, you know, I'll tell you, a very good friend of mine out in North Carolina was 55. He normally goes out to Colorado to be with university students and high school students for the summer teaching them. He didn't have that opportunity. And there were a lot of other circumstances in his life. But because, you know, I'm convinced because of the lockdown and how much he felt lonely and was alone, ended up committing suicide a few weeks ago.
I'm so sorry.
You know, so this is something that has really touched and concerned a lot of people to have, you know, churches and other activities closed. Mm.
That's so painful to hear. Well, it's a very powerful argument, folks. If you haven't read it, if you go to justthenews.com, we have Jenna's great legal work there, and you can read the complaint. This is going to be a historic case, I suspect. Do you think this gets all the way into the federal appeals and all the way up into the Supreme Court? Is it that important?
Well, it's definitely that important. And I hope that, you know, we always hope that we just win in the first instance and we don't have to go that far. But we are challenging this initially through the state level. So
correct.
Our arguments are based on the California state constitution, which mirrors our federal constitution, but it very well could end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. So, you know, this does have, I think, precedent as well, because Pastor MacArthur is, of course, internationally renowned. He's been the lead pastor of Grace Community Church for 51 years,
right.
Is just beloved by the evangelical Christian community. So a lot of other churches, I think, are looking at his lead and what happens in this case. And he's encouraging other pastors to stand up and stand firm to make sure to shepherd their churches and their communities firmly and without pandering to these ridiculous restrictions.
And are you seeing any harassment by the state, by the government? You mentioned the camera incident. What other things has this church or other churches that you're aware of put up with from state regulators who've tried to intimidate them into not having worship services?
Yeah, well, for the past 2 weeks, the health officials have actually shown up at services wanting to enter and observe, which, of course, is you know, very disruptive to have their presence there when worshipers are trying to be there to participate in worship. So, you know, not only have they come, even when we asked them not to, we said, you know, we're trying to work all of this out and, you know, we're happy to show you the premises and other things outside of when we're actually holding services. But, you know, they went ahead and showed up anyway. And, you know, that was very disrespectful to the service. And also, you know, I'll tell you, John, about 6 hours after we filed this lawsuit, LA County now through their health department has filed for a restraining order to try to shut down the services. So they were ready. They didn't even care what we said in the complaint. We asked them, you know, please have all of the health officials read our lawsuit,
right.
Read the arguments, understand this. They were ready to go. They didn't care. They're just trying to target this church.
for a country that was founded by a bunch of pilgrims and Puritans that came over trying to escape government intrusion on their faith. We're only 400 years removed from that. What has this pandemic done to the American consciousness about the importance of religious liberty and the importance of religious freedom? It seems like there are many states that don't feel like religion is an essential or even important part of society anymore. How did we get to this point?
Well, you know, and that's a great question. I think that, you know, Americans are waking up and realizing that liberty and freedom is very precious. And they're recognizing that we need to relearn civics. We need to understand how far we have gone. And, you know, this has been a variety of factors, John, that, you know, when we are in a post-truth society, when we are in a society of, you know, people who look at their government as, you know, giving them handouts, as more of a socialist view, as an activist judicial system has taken a political route over the past 50 and 60 years. They've stepped well outside of their margins. You know, we look at all of these things put together and America has been slowly transformed. And so we need to take this back. And as conservatives, we need to conserve our founding principles. And like President Trump said so eloquently from Mount Rushmore, we have a heritage in America, and we have founding principles that America is the beacon of liberty and freedom to the rest of the world. And we need to, with our vote in November, we need to not only vote to reelect President Trump to make sure that he gets to continue to put on the federal bench judges that will protect and preserve all of our freedoms. I mean, even if you don't go to church and you don't really care about religious liberty, you care about your family, you care about your business. Everybody cares about freedom and the opportunity for prosperity in this country. And so we need to vote for President Trump because he will preserve and protect that. But we also need to vote all the way down ticket because as we see so clearly through this pandemic, the Democrat-led states and cities and municipalities, they used this so quickly to just harness illegitimate power, widespread power, to now tell churches, tell businesses, tell, you know, you and I how we can live our lives when they don't have a compelling interest, when they don't have a health reason. This isn't about health. This is about partisan politics. And we need to start taking our country back.
It's an extraordinary time, and you're on the front lines of this. For our listeners, I've been blessed to know you for a while, and I've seen your great work on Fox and in the courts and for the campaign. But tell everybody, how did you decide you wanted to be a lawyer and do this type of work? I mean, this is important work, but it's also hard work. It's not the glamour work that a lot of people go into law or other things for. But what inspired you to become a lawyer and do these sort of things?
Yeah, well, thanks for that question. And, you know, the short answer is, you know, I'm an evangelical Christian. I am, you know, thankful that God has ordained and established my steps every step of the way. But, you know, I was homeschooled all the way through. And through that experience of really getting mentorship from my parents, getting a really solid education in history and understanding civics, that really set me on a path of being able to, at a very young age, analyze some of these things. And I knew I wanted to be a lawyer from the time I was 14. I came home from a class that was geared toward homeschooled students to teach about government. And one of the things we did was a moot court program. And I came home from that 1 week and I told my parents, I want to be a lawyer. And I've never changed my mind on that. So I thought I was going to be a career prosecutor. I was a prosecutor for a while in Colorado. And then going through law school, though, it just, constitutional law bugged me. And I hated the class. It was my worst grade in law school because I didn't understand it. I was like, how is this possible that when we know that truth doesn't change, how can we say that the arbitrary whim of the majority of 9 Supreme Court justices can tell us, you know, today something is wrong and then tomorrow just be like, oh, that's fine. You know, that didn't make sense to me. And so I wanted to provide an argument and a defense for the principles that I now advocate for the president, for the campaign, now for John MacArthur. And I wanted to present a clear defense. So in 2015, I wrote a book called The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, and it lays out that defense. And through that book, I was able to then teach. I became a professor. I'm an allied attorney with Alliance Defending Freedom, started specializing in constitutional law. And, you know, and then one day I got a phone call from the president of the United States who, said, you know, you're hired. And I said, yes, sir. You know, so, it's been an amazing, just ride. I have to say, I mean, it's been amazing to be able to, know personally the leader of the free world, and especially a president as amazing as Donald Trump.
Well, we also know, I know it feels like a ride, but there's a lot of hard work. I know how hard you work.
Yes.
We've talked many nights late at night, and I see you always online working, and you're an industrious and hardworking
but it's the hard work that's the fun, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, and you know that too, John, because you're the hardest working investigative reporter in D.C., so I appreciate that about you.
It's a small crowd in that one, I'll tell you. Oh, boy. Gosh. Well, the case is so important. Folks, if you haven't seen it, check out this complaint today. It's so important. We have it on justthenews.com. And I want to pivot to a couple other important things, because when you're not out there defending the religious liberties of great churches, you've been working very hard on this growing mail-in balloting and ballot fraud and voter fraud issue that I think is going to become the issue of the fall. Tell us where things stand in your mind, having done a lot of research. First off, the media has this story, this narrative, like they had with Russia a few years ago. There is no ballot fraud. There's no such problems. You found a lot of them, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, all you have to look at is, you know, this past year, even right. When you have, you know, instances of fraud, when you have, you know, 110% of, you know, going back to L.A., right, who are voting, when you have New York, what happened with their chaotic two different elections there that they didn't even know the outcome for over 6 weeks. When you look at what's going on in Pennsylvania, you know, when you look at Paterson, New Jersey, that right. One out of every five ballots was discarded as ineligible. And, you know, and then you look at Pennsylvania with the votes wagon of the Democrat operatives that are going around ballot harvesting, collecting ballots and saying, sure, I'll turn that in for you. And you have no idea whether that's altered, manipulated, or even gets to the polls. And so And the biggest issue right now going on, you know, even with all those examples, is in Nevada, where the General Assembly, with less than 90 days to go before the presidential election, passed AB 4, this Assembly Bill 4, where they're basically trying to remove every single precaution and security from the election in November. So they're trying to push out universal vote by mail, which is just the state sending out millions and millions of ballots to unverified individuals and unverified addresses. And by the way, when I say individual, that now can either mean a dog or a cat in some instances that we've seen.
Yeah,
and then they also want to remove the protections from the back end and allow ballots to be counted well after the deadline. So this is just setting us up for absolute chaos.
Now, I want to walk you through the different types, because sometimes people hear mail-in balloting and it's all one big soup, but there's different types of balloting. So I want to go through a couple of the terms that you used. Help our reader, because you're so smart, you're going to do this way better than I am. Absentee ballots, been around a long time. Any concern with absentee ballots?
Yeah, no. So the only concern with absentee ballot is to make sure that it actually properly gets to the precinct so that it is counted. And so if you are a person who you're a registered voter, you request your ballot to your current address.
Right.
That's great. A lot of people do that. That's what the president's talking about in Florida. That's one person requesting their own ballot. But best practice, if that's you, turn that in yourself at, you know, at a drive-by drop-off box. Or if you have to, if you're out of state, like I am right now, I'm in D.C., but I'm still a resident of the state of Colorado,
right?
I'll have to send it through the mail. But what I'm not going to do is give it to a third party, to a harvester, and say, sure, turn that in for me. So absentee, perfectly fine, available in all 50 states, but make sure that you are observing best practices if you have to vote absentee. But the ultimate best practice, of course, is to show up in person and vote. And if we can stand in line at a grocery store, at a hardware store, we can stand in line to vote.
That's a great point. You don't hear the media say that, but it's so true. And I think there will be tens of millions of people ready to do so on November 3rd. Ballot harvesting, that is a term that has become more and more prevalent in society. I want to take people back. I mean, there are a couple of states where predominantly the majority of the state now votes by mail-in. I think Washington State is one of those. But there is this new science, this new political get out the vote operation called ballot harvesting, where people go out, give you the application, you fill it out, they come back when you get the ballot and they promise to deliver it. And there are real concerns about the legality and of some of the practices in ballot harvesting. And it seems like Democrats are more are doing that more often than Republicans, right? Ballot harvesting seems to be a Democrat phenomenon. Am I accurate in saying that?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, ballot harvesting, like a lot of other good ideas, started out with trying to help elderly people or people who were in an at-risk category, having their caregiver or a family member be able to assist them. And that makes sense, right? We all go, okay, you know, that's helping someone with turning in their ballot. But then what's happened is then ballot harvesting now becomes, it's not just, you know, me helping my mom or, you know, you helping your grandparents. It then becomes a totally unrelated person, not just collecting, you know, one or two ballots, but going around and collecting thousands and thousands of ballots for the purpose of, you know, of potentially altering, manipulating the ballots or not even turning them in if you don't vote the quote unquote correct way. So ballot harvesting happens. There have been multiple instances of prosecutions. For example, in the state of Texas, right, there was a ring of women who actually went and targeted an elderly nursing home and tried to collect all of the ballots in the nursing home. And so when you're talking about a state like Florida, absentee is fine, but don't give your ballot to a harvester. Make sure you are turning it in yourself. And so ballot harvesting, you know, like Pennsylvania, the Votes Wagon, that was a Democrat operative, an operation that went around in these neighborhoods just to collect ballots. So harvesting, while it started off as, you know, a good idea to help people genuinely in need of that service, this has now, of course, become a way to manipulate the system.
Unreal. Over the, a couple of weeks ago now, it goes by fast, but after all this media coverage thing, there's no election fraud. I went through PACER, the court system, and just pulled federal and state prosecutions. And there are some amazing schemes that have gone on in just the last couple of years. And I just want to go through a couple of them. In California, they were paying homeless people to pose as voters because someone had gotten hold of their mail-in ballot or their ballot. And they a man was just charged for that in a widespread effort in Los Angeles that occurred on Skid Row. And then we've had in Philadelphia, you know, old-fashioned ballot box stuffing that went on for years. And multiple people in the Democratic Party have been implicated, including a former congressman. So from coast to coast, from north to south, you heard the Texas one. If you loosen the protections on voting, it appears more and more people will take advantage of trying to exploit that and create illegal and inappropriate voting. What will the Trump campaign, what will the Republican National Committee, what should everyday Americans do beyond practicing their own safe voting? Okay, make sure if you do an absentee ballot, don't give it to a harvester, deliver it yourself, follow good practices. But what can the Trump campaign do? What will it do? What will the RNC do? What can everyday Americans concerned about this issue do to stop ballot fraud around them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great question. And like almost everything else, it starts with good education. So once you know safe practices, inform your friends and family of safe practices, encourage them to vote in person if they can, or, you know, definitely don't allow a harvester to collect their ballot, you know, go through all of those safety practices. And for people who want to help out, you can go to armyfortrump.com. That's our Election Day operations.
Okay.
And if you want to vote in your, or you want to help rather in your precinct and actually show up on Election Day and help with election integrity and even the weeks leading up to the election in your home state and district, then you can sign up at armyfortrump.com. And what the RNC and the Trump campaign is doing beyond our Election Day operations to make sure that, you know, regardless of who you're voting for, we want to make sure that every eligible person's vote is counted and counted once. We don't want it diluted. And we want to make sure that the American hallmark of our citizen representatives and our citizen government is free and fair elections. And so we are also, you can go to protectthevote.com to see where the RNC and the Trump campaign is fighting through the court system and litigation to hopefully curb this tide somewhat before November 3rd.
Now, you've already had an impact in California, right? Didn't Gavin Newsom withdraw his mail it to everybody plan after the RNC and the Trump campaign and others sued?
They did. And, you know, unfortunately, in California, the General Assembly, that is also Democrat led in both chambers, came to his rescue. And our argument there was that you can't, the executive branch cannot change voting laws just through executive order. But the General Assembly came and basically bailed him out and they passed legislation. So we're still contemplating, you know, what to do with that in California. Similarly to Nevada, you know, it did go through the legislature, but we can still file suit on those types of bills because there is an equal protection argument. There are other constitutional concerns with removing safeguards this close to an election.
Yeah,
forever.
Such an important argument. It's going to be an amazing election, and perhaps the first election since 2000, the hanging election in Florida, where you know the courts are going to be, I think, significantly involved in this election nationwide, not just in episodic cases, but I think there's a national play for the courts here probably over the next few weeks. And that's a subject I want to turn to quickly because you mentioned the importance of judges. I just saw a speech yesterday from a senior Justice Department official who announced that for the first time in 57 years, every single appellate court judgeship has been filled. The first time a president has done that since the 1950s or 1960s. Really remarkable tribute. The Trump team has seemed to really put a premium on not letting any court judgeship go unfilled, right? Leave no judge behind, I guess, is the plan. But talk about the success record of the Trump administration on getting jurists through the Senate.
Yeah, well, you know, I've always said as a constitutional law attorney, the two most important powers that the president of the United States possesses, first is commander in chief of the military, and the second is the ability to nominate federal judges all across, you know, the federal bench as well as the Supreme Court. And so President Trump has made that a priority to make sure to put conservatives on the bench. And, you know, for people who are listening who don't understand, that doesn't mean that Republicans always win. That means that we're conserving the rule of law, that these are genuinely umpires who understand that they have no political interest in which team wins. They are simply applying fairly and faithfully the rules of the game. And so conservative judges is what every side should want. But of course, you know, the Democrats want the activist judges that will ensure that their policies and their preferences are pushed through the judicial branch and they're manipulating it. So President Trump is actually very close to actually flipping the Ninth Circuit that is out there, you know, covers California and a few other states out there that's been known as the Ninth Circus for so long because they've just been so ridiculous and they have the worst record of being overturned at the U.S. Supreme Court. So he's now appointed well over 200 federal judges, as well as obviously Justice Brett Kavanaugh and Justice Neil Gorsuch.
And if he were to get another 4 years, this record of filling judicial appointments and perhaps more on the Supreme Court would be bigger. I think it's a big issue in the election that will motivate a lot of voters, I suspect.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that that's something that we as conservatives really need to consider as we look at who we are voting for and we look at what is at stake here. I mean, it's not just the top level policies. This goes all the way throughout our entire system of government. And we need to make sure that we're, with our vote, doing the best that we can to make sure that our citizen-led government is preserving and protecting our rights at every level, from the federal all the way down.
Such an important issue. All right, I'm going to take the two issues we talked about. I'm going to mash them together in a soup bowl here. We've been talking about religious freedom in the era of COVID and all the restrictions. We've been talking about voting and balloting and the issues there. I want to put them together because, as you've aptly noted, many of the places that are being kept closed in the COVID crisis right now, schools and churches on election day, often are precinct locations for voting. Are you concerned that there's a continuum, some sort of dynamic here that could really have a negative effect on election day? If schools are closed all the way up to election day, will they not open to be precincts on election day? And could that be part of a larger strategy?
Yeah, you know, John, this was a really interesting issue to me as I was looking at you know, what we're dealing with on the campaign side. And we know that Democrats are trying to push this nationwide scheme of universal vote by mail. And they're trying to use the coronavirus pandemic as a pretext to push that through and say, oh, well, it'll be too onerous for people to get to the polls. They're trying to close polling locations in order to justify that, say it'll be overly burdensome. And so we know that. And then we look at how they're treating churches and schools in particular really disparately, and they are trying with their best efforts to keep churches and public schools closed. And, you know, as we're looking at this, and I'm thinking, you know, Democrats have always been for public education. I mean, now that, you know, so many people are actually doing homeschool and they're, you know, I mean, this seems to be really antithetical to what Democrats have always stood for. It occurred to me that statistics show that there are so many people, and I want to get the accurate number, but I was reading, you know, just a few statistics yesterday that somewhere in the neighborhood of 60% or more of individuals not only register, but actually show up to vote at churches and public schools. And so when you look at that, could it be that Democrats are targeting churches and schools because this is going to help advance their election integrity nationwide vote by mail scheme? And I think that there's a really interesting comparison there.
Fantastic news to watch. We should be watching that and keep an eye on that. I think it's a dynamic a lot of people haven't put together, but I know you have and you've been watching it closely. All right, last thing, because I know you got a lot of busy legal things to get to. I want to ask one other question. Earlier this week, you were the target of a digital social flash mob that reached out and attacked you for some comments you made about the Pennsylvania health secretary, who is a biological male that identifies as a transgender woman. Tell me what that was like, and I'd like to give you a chance to respond, because the social media mob has done quite a bit of job of responding for you. But what happened, and what's your response to all those who criticize you?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, we can look at what Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania and Dr. Levine, this health secretary, what they did in response to the coronavirus pandemic and all of the failures in Pennsylvania, similarly to New York with, you know, nursing homes. And we can and should hold them accountable just on that issue in their own right on that. But the thing that, you know, should not be controversial at all is to simply say that Dr. Levine, who is born Dr. Richard Levine, who now identifies as Rachel and is a transgender woman and wants to be called she and her, well, he is still a biological man. And to simply recognize that fact, that our biology and is immutable. That's something that no matter how much we butcher our bodies, no matter what fantasy world we're living in, no matter what we want to be called, we are still immutably male and female. And so to simply acknowledge that on Twitter became this extremely overblown controversy where, you know, oh my gosh, this is hate speech. And, you know, this is, you know, you're not respecting this person. Well, I think actually, John, it is more respectful to a person to acknowledge reality and the truth of how God made them, rather than allowing them to perpetuate a lie to themselves and to their communities. But this is what the Democrats and the extreme leftists want. They want to compel us to have to participate in their lies. They want to compel us to have to speak against our own sincerely held beliefs and against the fundamental empirical truth of the reality to which God's presented us. And I simply stood up, and I hope that that encourages other people to simply stand up for truth. And so, you know, that became a controversy, and to the extent that it helps people simply say, you know what, we don't have to pander and cater to the lies of the left. I hope that that does encourage people. And, you know, and as a Christian myself, and speaking only for myself, I do pray for this country, for the people who are caught up in this, especially the children that this impacts. I mean, if you look at the transgender movement and how children are affected by hormone therapy, by surgeries, by, you know, so many things that are outside of their control, they are the greatest victims of this movement and this evil from the left. And, you know, I applaud J.K. Rowling for standing up for the truth of this. And I would also encourage people to read a book by a very good friend of mine. Her name is Nancy Pearcey, P-E-A-R-C-E-Y. and it's called Love Thy Body. And she goes through the reasons why we need to respect our bodies as God made them and actually recognize that empirical truth. And she goes through some really good philosophical arguments of recognizing biological truth.
When I read through some of the Twitter comments aimed at you, and I grew up in a family full of Irish cops, so I'm not one to blush easily, but there were some pretty ugly things in there, which I know you brush off. You don't take anything personally. But you know, one of the things here is if you have these views as a Christian, as a conservative, as you clearly do, and you so articulately laid them out, people try to portray this as you hate that person, you're hateful. This is hate speech. I saw that a lot in the pushback on you. Do you hate the Pennsylvania secretary?
Not at all. And, you know, I pray for him and I hope that he comes into saving knowledge of Jesus Christ as his own personal Lord and Savior. And, you know, for any of these people who, even though obviously we're fighting against the evil ideas and the evil agenda of the left, the individual people that are caught up in this, I genuinely feel sorry for them. And I genuinely hope that, you know, they end up coming into an understanding of the empirical truth and that, you know, the only meaning and joy and answer to life's most basic questions for any of us, who we are, why we're here, where we're going, who is God? The only truthful answer to that is found in the Christian worldview contained in the Bible. And that is true no matter what issue any of us struggle with. I'm a sinner as well. I mean, and I thankfully am hopefully daily becoming more perfected into the image of Christ. And so, you know, to claim that this is hate speech is just a really easy way for, you know, people to push back. And what was so funny too, John, is one person on Facebook said, you know, this is so hateful and you have to call everyone by their personal preferred pronouns. And, you know, and I know that you're a biological female, but you're just so evil that I'm going to only call you it. And I thought, so wow. He's so convinced of his own argument that he's not going to call me by my preferred pronouns. I mean, this is how absurd the left is at arguing.
It's you know, there are legitimate disputes and there's no reason to make them things of hate and flash mob mentality. I think that's one of the most troubling things I see in the future of America is this willingness to not agree to disagree, but instead to turn everything into hatred and destruction and personal destruction, which particularly in the last 3-4 years since President Trump has become president has become more of a norm than the aberration. And I think we all need to look inward and try to find a way to solve this anger and this hatred that divides us. There's much more that unites us and divides us in America because we're such a great country. We really are.
We are. And, you know, and I'll say one more thing on that. Sure. I mean, this is why America is so exceptional and why our first freedoms are embedded and enumerated in our First Amendment to the Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly and association and free exercise of religion. Why? So we can come together to speak together about truth and about God. And our government is not supposed to compel us to believe in God, to not believe in God. This is something that we all have to make a personal decision. What do we believe? What do we believe about truth? What do we believe about God? And in our country, we should have the freedom and liberty to debate these things openly and without censorship from government. And frankly, without censorship from big tech either.
Yeah, no, that is the defining issue of the next few years. We've got to get through this and realize that it's okay to disagree and to have a robust debate, and one side shouldn't silence the other just because they own a Twitter or a Facebook or whatever it's going to be in the future. Well, Jenna, how do people follow you, get in touch with you if they have a case? Or how do we follow you on Twitter? Or do you have a law firm address? How do people get in touch with you?
Yes. So find me on Twitter at Jenna Ellis ESQ. That's for Esquire. So at Jenna Ellis ESQ. I'm also on Facebook. You can also find me, of course, at the campaign. You can go to DonaldJTrump.com or for anything legal related. You can also find me with the Thomas More Society. It's M-O-R-E, ThomasMoreSociety.org.
All right. Well, thank you for spending so much time. And we covered a lot of ground. I hope we get you back before Election Day, because I have a funny feeling the very issues we talked about today are going to be that important still on November 2nd, November 3rd. We'll try to get you back.
Sounds good, John. Anytime.
Thank you, Jenna. All right, folks, we're going to come back in a second and wrap things up. You've just been listening to Jenna Ellis. Was that a blast? We had a lot of fun. We'll be back in a few seconds. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guaranteed. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Thank you for tuning in today. Thank you for tuning in all week. We've had some amazing guests. You heard from Sean Hannity. You heard from the author who has challenged the COVID-19 reporting and misreporting in the news media. He was great, Matt Margolis, a tremendous book. If you have a chance, go get that. I love that book. It does a good job of highlighting, just like reporters got Russia wrong, they've gotten a lot wrong in COVID-19, and somebody has to hold them to account, and Matt Margolis has done that. All throughout the week, we've been blessed with great guests, newsy guests, breaking news. Jenna Ellis, a great example. Now, we're going to head into the weekend. I hope everybody has a safe and healthy weekend. Hope you enjoy your time with your families. We'll be back next week with lots more news. We're going to have a Democratic convention, well, kind of, next week in Milwaukee. It'll kind of be virtual, kind of like what we saw with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden in an empty high school auditorium. President Trump's going to have it the week after that. So we're going to see two virtual, for the first time in our lives, two mostly virtual nominating conventions. But you know what? It's going to be news. There'll be important things going on. We're going to check it out and be leading the way at Just the News. You can check in often with us. And next week's podcast, I suspect, will have a little bit to do with the conventions, the election, and politics, and maybe a whole lot more. All right. Have a wonderful weekend. You've been listening to John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. We'll be back at you next week. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.